When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Monday Matinee on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated G for general audience.
Hi there, and welcome to Season 13, Episode 535. I'm not just your podcaster, I'm your broadcaster, Jack Ward.
And I'm sharing the microphone wherever we go. I'm David Ault. And Jack, is there a reference to our affiliates buried in there?
Well, I'm grateful that we're broadcast across Canada from coast to coast and in various places around the world. Actually, tonight's show is about a radio station that broadcasts short snippets during a zombie apocalypse.
Ah, that would be Mercury, a broadcast of hope from David Benedict.
That's right, and the vigil for the future begins right here.
On the Sonic Society.
Hello? Hello? Test 1, 2, 3. Are we getting through?
We've got it. I can hear you.
What? Did you say you can hear me?
Yes, it's a little fuzzy, but you're totally coming in.
About time. Okay, this is Max O'Brien broadcasting on WEHG.
Do you really think the FCC cares about that kind of thing now? I don't think it applies anymore.
Fine. Okay. It's been about 3 months since our last broadcast. We've sort of lost track of time, so it's tough to be sure. When we were last on the air, we had just heard that there had been some attacks, like physical attacks by people on other people in the area that later spread around the world. Given the ferocity of the attacks and the biting, there was speculation that it was...
Go on, say it. We talked about this. We have to give all the information.
There was speculation that it was a zombie outbreak. Fine. Are you happy now?
I don't think any of us are happy, Max. Keep going.
Our last transmission included a joint statement from Homeland Security and the CDC urging people not to panic, to stay home, and that additional information would be forthcoming in the coming days. It has now been, as I previously mentioned, about 3, maybe 3.5 months since our last transmission, shortly before we lost power. Since that time, we have been locating a generator and fuel for it, making repairs to the transmitter and fortifying our position against attack from both the living and the dead. Not long after we lost power, we were approached by several individuals looking for shelter. We took them in, but they decided to take advantage of our hospitality to steal several key components of the station for their own use. When there was nothing left that they considered valuable, they went away. On a foraging run later, we discovered their half-eaten bodies. That was when we decided we needed to make the fences around the station a little stronger. We got our stuff back, too.
Nobody cares, Max.
We have not heard from any governmental entity since we lost power, but we consider ourselves responsible journalists.
Speak for yourself. I'm an academic.
Yeah, don't lump all of us into your weird crusade for the truth. All I want is to get back home and get back to normal. That's even possible anymore.
I consider myself a responsible journalist and enlisted the aid of Rosalind...
It's Dr. Clark.
Dr. Rosalind Clark and Agnes Drew, my intern here at the station, to help me repair the damage to the transmitter. We will be spending what time we can in keeping you up to date with, well, whatever information we have available. There is limited fuel for the generator, though, so we will be restricting our broadcast to a few minutes each day. You will hear from us each day, though, and if you're listening, we hope you find some hope in what we say. Right now, all we can tell you is the power is still down. If you can hear us, you probably have a generator of your own or a stockpile of batteries. We urge you to conserve your resources if you have those things. The last living person we heard from was heading north and reported that the dead were scattered, but that they might be starting to clump together a little.
That could just be simple random movement. We don't know if it's characteristic of their behavior.
Who says they're even complex or intelligent enough to have actual, predictable behavior?
Nobody does. Nobody knows anything yet. We have to get more information.
Why do we have to do anything? Isn't that what scientists are for?
I am a scientist, remember? PhD in marine biology and ecology. That's the whole reason I'm even here. I was supposed to get interviewed about the marine life off the coast here. Now I'm stuck with you two while the world is ending.
Well, I'm not any kind of scientist. I'm just a station manager here at this college radio station trying to keep it together.
Maybe we shouldn't discuss this on the air.
Right. As I was saying, it's important to conserve what resources you have.
Like gasoline, for a certain generator.
At this time, we don't have a lot of information, but we're going to be trying the internet periodically, so hopefully that'll come back up, and we can get access to more news that way.
Maybe we could ask the folks in the lighthouse.
What folks in the lighthouse?
I don't know who they are, but I was watching Gipstein Lighthouse yesterday, and there's definitely somebody over there.
How long have you known about this? This is important! What if they're watching us? What if they come over here and try to break in and take our stuff?
Like I said, since yesterday, or last night, technically, and they're all the way over there. I don't think they could see us from there. The only reason I could see them is because I could see their shadows walking across the lighthouse beam. I think it's interesting that it's still shining.
I'm sure it's set up on some kind of automated system.
Sure, whatever, but like I said, they're way over there.
Ever heard of binoculars, Agnes? No, it's okay. It's done. We'll just have to keep an eye on them. Oh, and I hope they're not listening to this broadcast.
Probably better wrap it up for today, Max. We still don't have a solid measure for how quickly the generator goes through the fuel.
You're right. So, I guess this is it for today. For Dr. Clark and Agnes, this is Max O'Brien signing off. This is day one of coming back on the air.
Hey, we should have a name for this thing we're doing.
Later, Agnes, later. Are we on?
I think so.
You think so? Is the little green light on?
Yes.
Then we're on.
I need you to show me again when we're done here.
Sure, no problem. Okay, this is Max O'Brien at 870 AM WEHG. Although I guess, like Dr. Clark says, the FCC has bigger problems than checking up on our station identification breaks, and Agnes wants us to have an actual name. Wait, I want to start over. This is day two since we came back on the air. We still haven't heard anything from anybody about what's going on. Wait, I want to start over. There's still zombies wandering around, but nobody seems to know why or what to do about it. Wait, I want to start over. The latest news is that, I want to start over.
What's the problem? We're burning fuel on the generator. Hurry it up.
I'm not sure how to do this.
What do you mean you don't know how to do this? You're the one teaching us. You've been doing this for 3 years.
No, I haven't. I've been running the station for 3 years. A little podunk college station that had a few thousand listeners if you wanted to be generous. This is a whole other level of responsibility.
What are you talking about?
Look, radio stations run on predictability. Rigid program grids. Exact timing. Nobody is going to listen to your show if they don't know when it's on. So you make sure it's going to come on at the same time every day. And the only way to do that is for every show to time them all out down to the last second. Everybody knows exactly when a show is going to start and exactly when it's going to end. Except that's not true anymore. We're running on a generator, for crying out loud. We're scanning the local radio dial, and we're picking up nothing from anybody else. We're the only station for miles that's broadcasting at all. We don't have a predictable schedule, and the world has actually ended. And it's not just us. Everything we ever relied on is either failing us or turning against us. Electricity is spotty, cell phones don't work, cars are still functional, but GPS isn't a thing anymore. And what happens when the gasoline runs out? These things that we took for granted, creature comforts, the ability to communicate instantly across access to all the world's information, all that's gone. And it doesn't stop there. All those stories we used to read and movies we used to see, they're all true now. And they're true in the most horrific way possible. The dead are walking the streets and people are seeing their friends, their family, everyone they ever loved, decayed. Defiled, utterly destroyed, Except that's not the worst of it. These people that they trusted with everything they had are now trying to attack them and kill them and make them do the same thing to their loved ones. And so people are having to kill the people who meant the most to them in the world. People are scared. They're confused. They're getting desperate. And here we are, sitting on the only mass communication method that we know of for miles around. Of course we have a responsibility. We have to help people. We have to tell them what's going on. Except we don't even know what's going on. We can look around our immediate area and report what we see, but we don't know what's going on in the wider world. We can't just report the news anymore. We have to help people. We have to give them hope. We have to tell them how to survive. We have to let them know that this isn't really the end of the world. We have to tell them that in a situation where their instinct is to say that it's every man for himself, that the only real way to survive is to band together. The zombies aren't our enemies any more than a hurricane or an earthquake is our enemy. They're a force of nature, a corruption of the best part of the human spirit. We're our own enemy, but only if we allow ourselves to be. We can't allow ourselves to be split off into factions and groups and tribes and classes, not if we want to continue to be a species on this planet. That's why we fixed the generator. That's why we're on the air again. All the work we did over the last 3 months or whatever it is was for this purpose. And now that we're here, I don't know how to do it.
I think you just did.
But I'm doing it wrong. I want to start over.
But you don't get to. Damn it, Max. I'm sure everyone out there listening to your little crisis of confidence on the air, which I would like to remind you again is burning up our fuel, is thinking the exact same thing. What if I'd apologized to my mother? What if I'd cut that toxic person out of my life and been nicer to that other person instead? We don't even know how all this got started. What if there's some scientist somewhere that does know what caused this and is sitting there in agony knowing that if they'd just done one little thing differently that all of us wouldn't be in this situation? Don't you think those people want to start over? But they don't get to, and neither do you. All you can do is try again. But you'll have to do it tomorrow because we've used up today's ration of gas. Let's wrap it up.
Okay. This is Max O'Brien, signing off for today. We'll be back tomorrow.
But I don't know what to say.
Start by introducing yourself.
I said we're broadcasting!
It's working?
It's working!
Hello. This is Agnes Drew with Max O'Brien and Rosalind Clark.
It's Dr. Clark.
Right. Dr. Rosalind Clark. This is the third day that we are broadcasting, which makes this day three. Actually, it's somewhere around day 100 or so. All three of us have a different number on how many days we've been here. I think we're at day 108, and Max says we're at day 98, and Dr. Clark, who is, after all, a scientist, says it's day 101, so she's probably right. But I still think we've been here 108 days.
Regardless, this is day three since we've been back on the air.
I hope that there is someone out there who can hear us. It's been a few months since they overran the station, and the three of us are super lucky that we're safe here. If you can hear me, I really hope you are safe too. And that you feel as lucky to be alive as I do. And I do feel very lucky. Which is a weird thing to feel, honestly. I mean, we're pretty much all alone out here right now. Everything has changed, and everything feels like a struggle. I thought school was hard, but this is a whole other level of learning, and just getting a passing grade isn't always going to cut it. You kind of have to get an A in everything all the time, or else you're not going to be very happy. Sometimes it can feel like we're in captivity here. It would get easy to be restless like a caged animal, but I haven't felt that. Our view on our situation is entirely up to how we wrap our own minds around it. Like the Roman god Mercury, he used the power of his mind to transform his surroundings. We could feel trapped here, but with the power of the mind, this place becomes a sanctuary, a haven, a safe harbor.
That's why I've been collecting books whenever we go out on runs. I think those are just as important as food and water and gasoline and everything else we're bringing back. All kinds of books. Instructional books are obviously important, but I'm bringing back every book I can find. Poems, fiction, nonfiction, even books on politics. Although we haven't heard anything from the police or anybody, so I don't know if politics are even a thing anymore. But one day they will be again. One day we're going to have to recreate every good thing we ever had, and books are going to help with that. I'm also keeping a journal so I can write down things we learn and stuff. I truly believe that we're not in this simply to survive, but to thrive. To be happy. Despite whatever is going on out there, we can still learn and grow and create. Dr. Clark says that they aren't human anymore, but we are. Humanity will make it through this with everything that makes us human. As long as we continue to care for each other and see beauty in the world and form true connections with other people. We have to help each other. We need to reach out to other survivors, to other people. We have to reestablish communication with what's left of our world. That's why we're broadcasting. Being holed up in the station has provided us with the resources to communicate to whoever is still out there. Like those folks in the lighthouse. I know Max thinks they might be dangerous, but he's just worried because of those guys that came by and robbed us right after the power went out. We haven't had any problems like that since then, and I think we should give those folks the benefit of the doubt. So if you're listening to us, lighthouse people, come on over!
Whoa, Agnes, what do you think you're doing?
Come on, Max, we've been on the air for 3 days already, and they haven't come over and made any trouble. Besides, lighthouses are really cool. I found a book that talked about them, and I'd love to hear about what living over there is like, and maybe even go see it for myself. The book said that in the old days, the lenses for lighthouses used to float and rotate in a bath of mercury. Hey, that's the second time that's come up. Maybe that could be our name. I've been saying we need a name. This could be it.
I don't think that's very descriptive of what we're doing. I mean, Max wants... And it sounds like you and I both agree, for this to be a broadcast of hope. What does mercury have to do with that? It's poisonous and fluid, and we're trying to be a force for positivity and stability. I don't know that we even need a name.
Of course we need a name, and I think it should be Mercury. It totally fits. The world has gone mad. You know the Mad Hatter? Mercury was used in curing felt used to make hats. That's why hat makers went mad. They'd have mercury poisoning.
Well, unless you're planning to run the generator off of Mercury, we need to wrap this up for today.
Yeah. Okay. This is Agnes Drew for Mercury, a broadcast of hope.
What?
Okay, bye!
Good day, everyone. It's us again. We're still on WEHG. We hope you're well. We had a big storm here last night, so please forgive me if I sound a little drained.
I thought we were off to Oz for sure.
I was thinking that as well. Funny to think we might never hear about a tornado again, at least until one were to come introduce itself personally.
Well, either way, I'm still Max O'Brien here with Agnes Drew and Dr. Rosalind Clark. It's now day 6 since we came back on the air.
Hey!
What the hell?
Someone's out there.
Zombies?
Zombies don't talk.
So what are we going to do? Remember those last guys who we let in? We might have been back on the air 2 weeks sooner if they hadn't taken some of the stuff they took.
I know, but...
Below the bunker! Anyone home?
Bunker? We're a bunker now?
Come on, yo! This is not a drill!
Who's out there?
My name's Wade! Now let me in!
What do you want?
I want in, damn it! Come on, they're almost on top of me!
What do you think, Roz?
It's Dr. Clark. I don't think we can call ourselves a broadcast of hope if we're willing to let people die.
But...
No, she's right, Agnes. Hang on!
Come on, Dad! Right behind me!
Lock it!
Howdy, y'all.
What's going on out there?
Could I suggest we, conduct pleasantries away from the door?
Good idea.
Is that a microphone?
Oh, good grief, I forgot. Well, listeners, we have a special treat, an unexpected guest in the studio, a Mr. Wade...
Wade Hoag. Hello, everyone.
Mr. Hoag?
Oh, please, ma'am, call me Wade.
All right, wait. How did you get here?
Walked, mostly. I had a dirt bike. That was dumb. And then I had a horse for a moment or two, but I'll give you 3 tries as to what happened to her.
No. I mean, how did you get up to the door? We closed up the fence months ago. Not to mention, it's topped with razor wire.
I climbed up a tree that's got a limb that goes over the top. That drop to the ground was a bit much, but I didn't have much of a choice at that point.
They can climb trees now?
Don't panic yet, Agnes. Go on, Wade. When we let you in, you said they were right behind you and almost on top of you.
I'd probably better start at the beginning. So I was walking through the campus over there and came across some of our friends. Actually, I'm quite upset with myself that I didn't smell them sooner. One was pretty vivid. Anyway, once I knew they were there, I started running. But some more came out and flanked me. That's when I saw your bunker here.
Since when are we a bunker?
Don't worry about it, Agnes.
It's just a word for fortified shelter. Usually underground, but they don't have to be. Anyway, I saw the bunker and made for it since there wasn't any other cover. But your fence did present me with a problem. That's when I saw the tree. Unfortunately, after I hit the ground, that's when I noticed that your fence has a nice tear in it.
The fence is a hole
whoa,
in it?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Well, it did. It did. I did a quick patch job with some fallen branches in 550 cord before I came over here. Unfortunately, a few of them had gotten in and had wandered over to the other side of the building where I couldn't see them. They wandered back while I was in the middle of the patch. That's when I started knocking.
So they're still out there?
A couple of them, yeah. But we can take them out. I just didn't have what I needed at the time and was in a bit of a panic.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Wade. Can't help but notice your firearm. Why didn't you just shoot him?
2 reasons. First, I'd consider it uncouth to not only illicitly shimmy over someone's fence and then proceed to make a spectacle of myself by firing my weapon in said person's yard without warning or notice. And secondly, and more importantly, I didn't want to attract any more company than we have. Though thankfully, few seemed inclined to come down here where your breach was.
Yes, the noise certainly would have attracted more. I guess we owe you our lives. If we'd gone out there not knowing some had gotten in through a hole, that could have gone badly for us.
I'm happy to do it, ma'am. It's not my place, I suppose, but how often do y'all walk the perimeter?
Huh?
How often do you walk the fence? You know, visually inspected for defects or evidence of tampering and the like?
We locked everything down around the time things really started to slide. I don't think we ever thought about it, really.
You really should check it every day, and especially after weather like these past evenings. And never at the same times, either. You don't want anyone looking in to learn your patterns.
You think the zombies can strategize?
Oh, I doubt the poor bug brains can do anything even resembling that. But people can. And desperation has a funny way of instilling craft in the human creature. If you allow me a drink of water and a moment to collect myself, I'd be more than happy to help you deal with our friends out there and then give you some tips on security and do a better patch job on your fence.
I think we could be amicable to that.
Great. So, what's the story on all of you? By the proximity of the broadcast tower, is it safe to assume that this is the location of the college radio station?
Actually, yes. I'm Max O'Brien. I'm the station manager. That's Agnes Drew, my intern. This is Dr. Rosalind Clark. She's a scientist. And we live here. And we've started broadcasting again for a few minutes each day.
Why?
To bring hope to people. Because people need hope.
We're on the air right now, actually.
Really? You're actually broadcasting? Your mission seems a little touchy-feely to me. I'd think people need more help than hope. Why don't you give them practical advice they can use, like teaching them perimeter security?
Well, it's not really our area of expertise.
But it seems to be yours. Maybe you could do that, Wade. Give people first aid tips, survival strategies, and stuff like that.
Stuff like that. Well, I know a thing or two. Right now?
We should actually sign off for today.
Could you come by regularly and be a featured guest on our show?
I could probably stop by occasionally, but I can't really stay long. Gotta keep moving, trying to help folks find their way to gatherings and other safe places. I do know a guy, though. Bill Slimp. I'll send him your way, although he's a bit of a... Well, I'll let you find out for yourselves. He's a good guy at heart, though.
We should probably go see to the fence.
I can get my drop bag. It has some goodies for our friends and some stuff for you 3 in exchange for room and board for the night. I can pay in cheese, fruit, leather, and shampoo.
Sold!
Okay, well, let's sign off here, and then, as Dr. Clark has reminded us, we should see to the fence. Well, listeners, this turned out to be a somewhat unexpected and even an educational broadcast. As always, we hope it finds you and yours well. We'll be back tomorrow. thanks to Wade. Good morning, everyone. We're back. This is day 7 since we came back on the air. Earlier in the week, Agnes had noticed that there were people in Gipstein Lighthouse, and then she went on the air and invited them over without consulting with myself or Dr. Clark.
I said I was sorry.
Anyway, as luck would have it, we met one of them yesterday. We saw a small boat making its way to shore from the lighthouse, and figuring that's who it was, we met the boat on the beach. It was indeed someone from the lighthouse by the name of Jennifer Long. She has taken up residence out there with her family. For those of you unfamiliar with this area, Gipstein Lighthouse is about a mile offshore from our current position. It's essentially a three-story French colonial-style brick house perched on a man-made island built back in 1909. The story is that the rich people living on the coast at the time wanted a nice-looking lighthouse in the style of their own homes rather than a tin can with a lamp out in the middle of the sound. Anyway, I have Jennifer here with me in the studio. Jennifer!
Hi! I'm a little nervous. I've never been on the radio before.
You're doing great. When I first started my internship, I was super awkward on the mic, but I got used to it. You already sound better than I did when I first started out.
Thanks. What should I say?
Well, just introduce yourself and tell us a little about how you and your family are surviving offshore.
Well, we had to evacuate our home in a hurry. We have a little outboard motor skiff, which luckily we all piled into with what little we could grab. Once safely away from the beach, Gipstein Lighthouse was the only place we could think to go. We felt safe there ever since. It's just enough space to accommodate my two children, my mom, and of course me. My son, who is 13, has always been an avid angler and has been a whiz at feeding us from the ocean. I happened to think to bring a small radio on which I've heard some of your broadcasts. I was thinking that I could contribute to your message when I see things that it would be helpful for others to know about. Like, right now, I can tell you that there are an above-average number of the dead about 3 miles from where we are now, up by Route 59, but they aren't coming this way. Other than that, not much to report, which I suppose is a good thing.
Definitely.
How are you keeping the lighthouse lit?
Not now, Agnes.
We're not really sure. Everything is running on some kind of automated system right now. Honestly, we're still mostly trying to get settled in and adjust to the new situation we're in. We are curious where it's still getting its power, obviously, but right now we just don't have the time to really investigate it.
Will you be able to come by regularly and let us know what's going on?
Not really. Getting here isn't really all that easy. We've only got a small boat, and I don't like leaving my family alone up there. If I see anything, I'll definitely make the trip if I possibly can, but I don't think I can make it over here just all the time.
Well, we certainly appreciate your coming over today.
It's my pleasure. I was wondering if I might be able to say something to your listeners, if it's okay?
Of course. It's what we're here for.
Thanks. I just wanted to let everyone know that, well, that they shouldn't give up hope. I know that's kind of trite, considering that's what you, Agnes, and Dr. Clark have been saying for the last few days, but, well, I just wanted to emphasize it. I think Agnes called it a broadcast of hope the other day, and I couldn't agree more.
Thanks. I'm thinking the whole thing could be called Mercury, a broadcast of hope.
Agnes, calm down, please.
But she's right, Max. We have a lot to be hopeful for, and a lot to be thankful for. Having made it safely this far is a miracle on its own. With the rise of the dead, literally and figuratively, I feel like both my spirit and my faith have been put to the test. My family has always been the most important part of my life, and my dedication and drive to protect them has been made stronger than ever through all this. We've been able to push through and accomplish more than we ever would have thought possible. I watch my daughter, who was only 4, display bravery and determination that most adults couldn't even muster. My son has been thrust into adulthood faster than he deserves. He takes far more responsibility in taking care of us than a teenager ever should. But I still see them being kids. When the seas are calm and the sun is rising, I watch them with wonder as they play like normal children. Despite everything, I have hope for their futures. They're growing up quickly, but don't parents always say that? They're strong. And as all parents do, I often feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And how could I possibly think that I could successfully raise children in this world? But those days are getting less and less frequent. We adapt and we grow. I know they'll be fine. When I have my moments of doubt, I lean on that faith. I truly believe that not only will everything come out okay in the end, we'll all come out better than we were before.
And your mother? I suspect she's shown incredible strength, too.
Oh, my goodness. You would never know that she's in her 60s. For the past few years, I've been preparing to take care of her as she ages. Now, she's taking care of me. I've always known that she was a strong woman, but I had no idea. The way that she carries our family and encourages everyone, she is continually fueling my faith, too. I have one request. I don't know if you have one around, but if you do and can spare it, I'd be really grateful.
What do you need?
More of a desire than a need. A Bible. I don't know the last time I even used a real one. For years, it's just been an app on my phone. I don't even need a complete one. I'd be grateful for just the New Testament. I find strength in Scripture. I value what it teaches. I'm doing my best to raise my children in faith and love, empathy, compassion, and caring. We all need to take care of each other, now more than ever. We rely on each other. None of us can do this alone.
That's a pretty powerful statement. Take care of each other.
Besides encouraging hope, that's a message I've been getting from your broadcasts. This unlikely team here in the station is doing just that, and hopefully any group of people out there listening.
Well, that's a good note to go out on today. I'm Max O'Brien, here with Jennifer Long and Agnes Drew. Take care of each other. Okay, you've got about 5 minutes. Go for it.
Okay, so welcome to Mercury, a broadcast of hope. This is day 8 since we came back on the air.
Agnes, we haven't actually decided that's the name. I still don't even think we need a name, and you keep obsessing over it.
It's my turn to address our loyal listeners, Max, and when it's my turn, I can call it what I want. Wait, to loyal listeners, we don't even know that anyone is even listening. I keep having to remind myself that I was supposed to be here doing an internship. It's been the craziest internship ever. It feels like we've been here forever. We are surviving, though, and that's everything right now, isn't it? I think the key to survival, to all of our survival, is to hold on to everything that has made us who we are. But who am I? Who am I? I'm Agnes Charlie Drew, English literature major, college radio account exec intern turned host, daughter, aspiring novelist, lover of Wonder Bread grilled cheese sandwiches when I can't sleep, and the smell of Banana Boat suntan lotion and Billie Holiday records and the sound of my mom's longshoreman laugh and my brother. God, Milo. Milo was my parents' oops baby, who was never supposed to happen. I was 10 when he came into our lives. Milo the miracle, who made me understand how the human heart is like the universe and just keeps expanding just when you think it's full up. Milo couldn't pronounce the G in my name when he was learning to talk. At first, he was calling me Anise instead of Agnes, which sounded like that weird licorice-tasting seed in Middle Eastern dishes. When he was first learning to write in kindergarten, he drew a picture of me and wrote A-N-U-S, because he was sounding out my name. Of course, that spells anus. That became, hands down, the longest-running joke in my family. After that, he actually called me anus, too. And usually in public, he'd shout things like, I love you, anus. For his birthday one year, I gave Milo a pillow that I had cross-stitched to say, I heart anus. He slept with it every night. He clung to it, like a life jacket holding him afloat amidst the crashing waves of his dreams. He held on to it for years. Far longer than most children hold on to things like that. I guess it brought him comfort. It eventually started falling apart, so he took the stuffing out of it and carefully folded up the fabric and put it in a drawer so he could still look at it whenever he wanted to.
But the point is that that's what he called me. That was my name, and that stupid mispronunciation of my name shaped me and contributed to who I am today. I spent countless hours with him trying desperately to get him to say the G, and after a while, I think he was doing it just to spite me. It led me to my love of words, as I tried so hard to find some way to get the idea across to him that my actual name was important, and that what he was calling me was embarrassing. Names are important. Names give identity and purpose and help us understand that we're all unique, special individuals in our own way. Even when you meet someone who has the same name as you, you still feel a sense of ownership of your name. It's one of the few things that can't be taken away from us, even in the world we're living in now. Our loved ones that we've all lost, we remember them for who they were and what they did, but we remember them by their names. We remember Treva and Marie and Brad and Thomas and Sam.
Your boyfriend? I thought you'd heard from him right before everything went to hell. I'm sure he's okay somewhere.
That's the problem. I don't know. I did hear from him, but I haven't told you what he said. He was supposed to meet me here at the station after my shift that day, like he always did. But he wasn't here yet. Something happened. He left me a voice message that I've played over and over. I keep my phone off most of the time to conserve what battery power is left, but when I get really lonely and miss him so much I can't bear it, I turn it on to hear it again. Don't let this strip the good from you. Don't let it spoil your beautiful history. It isn't you. It's happening to you, but it isn't you. I heart anus. I love you, Agnes, Charlie, Drew. And then the line went dead. There were some of those things chasing him. I could hear them.
You know what, Agnes? You're right. We do need a name.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be getting into all of this on the air.
No, this is the perfect place. And it's the perfect place for me to apologize. I never let you show me what's so special about the name Mercury. If it's going to define us, we need to understand.
Okay. Well, thank you. So here in my journal, I wrote down all this stuff I found in some of the books you've been collecting. So you know the Roman god Mercury, yes?
Sure, the guy with wings on his ankles. He ran really fast, right?
Sort of. He was the messenger of the gods, just like we're messengers, bringing hope and news and advice to our listeners. But he was so much more than that. He was also the patron god of travelers and luck and poetry. And he guided souls to the underworld. Sometimes I think that's what's going on, that they are just lost and need someone to guide them where they belong. Plus, there's also Mercury, the element, which some people called Quicksilver, a metal that's fluid, adaptable, and flexible, just like we're going to have to be to survive here.
You're right, Agnes. And you know what else? Dr. Clark isn't ready to admit that she likes it, but she did point out that it's in our call letters. WEHG, the chemical symbol for Mercury, HG. So, we already are HG, Mercury. It's a great name. So, Mercury, a broadcast of hope?
That's right.
All right, then. Mercury it is. And so, from the newly named Mercury, a broadcast of hope, this is Max O'Brien and Agnes Drew signing off until tomorrow.
Wait, don't forget what Jennifer told us we should tell people.
What's that?
Take care of each other.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Mercury, a broadcast of hope. That's the name you and Max settled on, right?
Yep.
Glad we got that settled. Anyway, it's now day 9 since we came back on the air, and...
Why'd you stop?
I thought you were coming in to tell us something.
No, but that little bit of dared air reminds me of a joke.
I love jokes. What is it?
No. No, absolutely not. We're not wasting any of the gas telling jokes.
So a bear walks into a bar, and the bartender says, "What'll you have?" And the bear says, "I'll have a rum and Coke." And the bartender says, "Okay, but why the big pause?" And the bear says, "I've had them all my life."
That was terrible.
And a waste of gas.
Oh, yeah? Well, then let's see the two of you do any better.
No. No jokes. This is serious.
How about this one? Two guys walked into a bar. The third guy ducked.
Ah, the classics. Here's one I heard just before the outbreak got really serious. A guy went to the zoo, but it only had one animal. It was a dog. It was a shih tzu.
Nice one. How about this? A horse walks into a bar, and the bartender says, "So why the long face?"
An oldie but a goodie. Here's another. A grasshopper walks into a bar, and the bartender says, "Hey, we've got a drink named after you." And the grasshopper says, "You've got a drink named Murray?"
Stop. What is wrong with both of you? We're supposed to be bringing people messages that will help them survive. What do jokes have to do with survival and coping and hope?
Everything?
Yeah. I mean, don't they say that laughter is the best medicine? If we dwell on serious stuff all the time, we'll go crazy. We need to laugh. We need to feed that part of ourselves that can see that there's still some humor and light in the world.
But people are dying.
Yes, and it's terrible, but... Look, when I was younger, I knew a guy who was very influential in my life. We weren't really close friends, but we were in a hobby group together, and he had a ton of charisma and was very kind, well, most of the time. He was also pretty sarcastic. But he was kind when it mattered, and he would always take time to help people when they needed it. He was a mentor to a lot of folks, and to me at least, he was kind of a second father, or maybe a big brother. He died at around middle age, which was way too young, and a lot of us were totally devastated. But at his memorial, in addition to all the speeches people made to help find support amongst each other, there were a lot of folks who told stories of funny things that he had done or said, and everybody stopped crying long enough to laugh and remember the good times. And then when it was over, we went back to crying, but, well, we didn't cry as hard because now we had something to hold on to besides what we'd lost. Laughing's important.
Okay, fine. But... could you at least tell better jokes?
Probably not. I mean, these are pretty awesome so far.
I know, right? How about this one? A skeleton walks into a bar and says, "Give me a beer and a mop."
Oh, so we're doing mostly bar jokes. A guy walks into a bar with a piece of asphalt under his arm and says, "Give me a beer and one for the road."
Nice. But we don't have to stick to bar jokes. What do you call a fish with no eyes?
Why do seagulls fly over the sea?
Because if they flew over the bay, they'd be bagels. Why was the sand wet at the beach?
Because the seaweed.
How about some that aren't one-liners? So there's this librarian, and all of a sudden this chicken walks into the library and comes up to the counter and goes, "Book." And the librarian says, "You want a book?" And the chicken says, "Book." And the librarian's like, "Oh, that's weird, but okay." So he gets a book off the shelf and puts it on the counter. Chicken reaches up, puts the book under her arm, heads out the door. A little while later, chicken comes back, puts the book back up on the counter and says, "Book, book." And the librarian says, "You want two books now." And the chicken says, "Book, book." And the librarian's like, "I just work here." Takes two books off the shelf, puts them on the counter. Chicken reaches up, puts them under her wing, heads out the door. A little while later, chicken comes back, puts the two books up on the counter and says, "Book, book, book." The librarian, who has been expecting this, merely silently slides three books across the counter. Chicken reaches up, puts them under her wing, heads out the door. Librarian says, "I am getting to the bottom of this if it's the last thing I do." Follows the chicken out of the library. The chicken crosses the road, because that's what they do, and heads into the swamp. And the librarian follows the chicken into the swamp for miles and miles and miles until finally they reach this frog. And the chicken sets the three books down, picks one up, opens it up, shows it to the frog. Frog says, "Read it."
That was awful. How about this one? A panda walks into a bar. He orders a sandwich, sits, eats the sandwich, seems to be enjoying it, finishes his meal, takes out a shotgun, turns to the guy sitting next to him, shoots him, and the bartender freaks out. He says, "Oh my gosh, why did you do that?" The panda says, "I'm a panda. Look it up." Walks out the door. The bartender pulls out a dictionary, looks up panda. The definition, panda, large Asian bear, eats, shoots, and leaves.
Ugh, back to the bar. Okay, try this one. So there's this guy who's walking along, and all of a sudden he sees this guy who is an obvious pirate. He's got a peg leg, an eye patch, and a hook for a hand. And the guy freaks out. He's like, "Oh my God, I love pirates. Tell me a story. Will you tell me a story about being a pirate?" And the pirate's like, "Arr, well, what kind of story would you like to hear?" And the guy's like, "Tell me a story about piracy on the open seas. Tell me how you got the peg leg." And the pirate's like, "Arr, well, it was a fearsome sea battle, you see, and all of a sudden a cannonball come flying up over the side of the ship and took me leg clean off. And ever since then, I've had the peg leg." And the guy's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear about your leg, but that's an amazing story. Tell me another one. Tell me how you got the hook." And the pirate's like, "Arr, well, after the sea battle, the ship sank and we were all on the lifeboats and we'd been stranded at sea for days and we were all just dying and my hand was hanging over the side because I was too weak to pull it back in. And all of a sudden a shark come up and bit my hand clean off. And ever since then, I've had the hook." And the guy's like, "Oh, that's such a tragic story for you, but it's so amazing. Thank you so much for telling me. One more, just one more. Tell me how you got the eye patch." And the pirate's like, "Ah, well, after we made it back to shore, we had to shop around for a new ship. And I'm looking around at one I was thinking of buying, and I look up. And I'm looking up into the rigging, and all of a sudden a seagull flies over and poops right in me eye." And the guy's like, "That's a really stupid story. I mean, it's gross, and why would you need an eye patch after that?" And the pirate's like, "Arr, it was me first day with the hook."
Oh, I just remembered this one. Where did the king keep his armies? In his sleeveys.
I said better jokes. These are terrible.
Okay, Dr. Clark, you tell one.
Fine, I will. Why was the mushroom invited to the party?
I don't know.
He was a fun guy. Okay, that's enough for today. No need to use up all the corny jokes all in one day. For Max and Agnes, I'm Dr. Rosalind Clark, signing off for today. Take care of each other.
And that's this week's show.
Please return with us next week as we listen in on some new oral traditions.
Sounds exciting. In the meantime, won't you please join in the conversation? Write us a review on iTunes.
You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter at Sonic Society or at AstroTour2010 or email us at sonicsociety@gmail.com.
Have a safe week and we'll see you right back here on the Sonic Society.
I'm David Ault. Have a lovely night.
Good night.
The Sonic Society is written and produced weekly by Jack J. Ward and David Ault, with original music by Sharon B. at SharonB.com. All features, interviews, and audio drama shorts are owned completely by their originators and provided to the Sonic Society by Creative Commons licensing. The Society itself originates from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. Thanks for listening.
This has been an Electric Vicuna production. And that's this week's show. Please return... Oh, that bet's you. And that's this week's show.
Hiya, kids. This is Stinky the Elf coming to you from the North Pole. You know, Santa Claus's workshop, right? Well, I've been asked to convey a special message to you that my boss, Santa Claus, that's right, the jolly old fat guy in the red suit, wants to hear from all the little boys and girls out there. Here's an opportunity to tell him your Christmas list and any other special holiday message you got. And on Fridays, starting the day after Thanksgiving, my boss will read your message out loud on a new podcast called Santa's Inbox, exclusively on the Mutual Network. He'll mention your first name only, plus the town you're from, and then read your email out loud so everybody can hear it. Ain't that exciting? Yeah, Sandy told me that he used to read letters from kids on the radio back in the day, but I told him, I'm only 300 years old. I can't remember that far back. Okay, what else? Oh, yeah, this offer is open to anybody. Kids, grown-ups, the young at heart, anybody who wants to send a special message or a dedication to anybody else. So anyways, start sending Santa Claus your emails now to santas.xmas.inbox@gmail.com. That's santas.xmas.inbox@gmail.com. Kids, please ask your folks to send your email for you.